This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio Free Radio.
The F Word, Vancouver's explicitly feminist radio show. Filling your head with naughty feminist ideas since 2007.
The F Word is a syndicated show produced in Vancouver, BC, Canada, at CFRO 100.5 FM, Vancouver's cooperative radio station. For more information about the F Word Media Collective, you can go to our website at feminisms.org. You can hear our shows through that site, plus coopradio.org, rabble.ca, archive.org, Pacifica Radio, and iTunes. And every Thursday from 8 to 9 p.m., we broadcast live from the downtown east side of Vancouver, unceded Coast Salish territory. I'm Carissa Raponin in the studio today with Irene Cloma, and today we are re-airing an F-Word interview with Darla Goodwin from May 2011 discussing ideas around Aboriginal feminisms. Darla addresses the hesitation of Aboriginal women to ascribe to a feminist label and her own choice to identify as feminist. She discussed the ways that Aboriginal feminisms may actually be alive and well under circumstances of more education, allyship, and understanding of Aboriginal traditions and feminist intentions. She talked about matriarchal leadership, respect across genders, histories of oppression, and advice for allies. Darla Goodwin and the F-Word's Ariana Bearer sat down in 2011 to talk about Aboriginal women and feminisms. Darla is a traditional Aboriginal woman, a community leader, and a strong advocate for the rights of women and children around sexual violence. Darla has been involved with anti-violence work, youth work, and Aboriginal community policing. Today on the F Word, we'll be airing the conversation they had around questions such as, how do feminist principles and Aboriginal teachings from local territories intersect? Is there such a thing as Aboriginal feminisms or Aboriginal feminism? Given Canada's context of colonization and systemic privileging of some over others, how have feminists been able to stand as allies with Aboriginal women and activists? At the UBC Women's Studies Undergraduate and Student Conference in 2011, the F Word had the privilege of hearing Dr. Sanera Dabani speak. Dabani is a critical race scholar and professor in UBC's Women's and Gender Studies program. She is also an anti-racist and feminist activist. According to her, Indigenous feminism rejects the idea that women's liberation will come separate from that of their families and communities. This stand is a radical critique of the individualism inherent in what she calls imperial feminism, the kind of white North American feminism that she associates with a commitment to individual choice above all else. This priority comes at the expense of recognizing that arguing for choice and human rights ignores the fact that so many are still fighting to even be considered fully human and therefore worthy of human rights and access to freedom of choice. It also operates as if the choices we make are somehow independent of their effects on others. Darla and Ariana spoke about matriarchal leadership, respect across genders, histories of oppression, and advice for allies. Ariane asked her to begin by introducing herself and her spirit name.
My spirit name, it's given. It comes through ceremony. How I say it in my languages, because I have two names, one Cree and one Ojibwe, is Nia Nagamupeasu Owasis, which means singing Fenderbershal, and Kanaje Gabuetikwe, which means twice standing woman. And my colonial name is Darla Goodwin. I'm from Pekasi's First Nations in Saskatchewan, and I'm Cree and Ojibwe.
So respect across genders is certainly not a new concept. Aboriginal territories in this part of the world have seen matriarchal leadership for generations and men's integrity in upholding these systems. Can you tell me about some of those teachings that you've received around that?
Well, traditional Aboriginal culture here on this part of Turtle Island or Canada, we were given a set of laws to live by, and those laws were governed by the female side of life. So everything began and ended with the female side of life. So beginning with our Mother Earth and our Grandmother Moon being the mother and the grandmother to all living beings in this part of the universe or this part of the cosmos. was integral, with the son being the first helper to the creator, which was male. So if you look at our traditional teachings, everything that we hold sacred has both a male and a female aspect to it, with the female being in the center as a sacred life giver, sharing in a 28-day cycle with the moon. So every 28 days, the moon fills up, the earth swells up, and every 28 days, women have their cycles. And those teachings are really, really in-depth, and I'm not going to go into them, but that's the gist of where the belief system that women are sacred as life givers, and their children are also sacred as the future generations of the people of the land. So there was no such thing in our traditional cultures as violence against women. It was considered to be an evil thing to desecrate a sacred womb. The work that I do is to end the desecration to the female side of life, which absolutely and completely encompasses sexual assault.
To go from a culture or a society where that just simply did not exist to one where we're seeing so many Aboriginal women facing sexual violence, I mean, it's catastrophic.
And it was implemented and devised and done on purpose by a government that is solely interested in the resources and the land that is owned by the Aboriginal people of this country. Canada is a government that sits on unceded territory. So the country of Canada is actually a government, and the land itself is still owned by Aboriginal people.
So feminism as a movement, or women working as feminists, are also working to eradicate violence against women, for example, and other issues of that nature. So do you see some intersections between what Aboriginal women activists are working for, working towards, and feminism for you? Do you feel intersections between those two?
Absolutely. And I think that because of the historical or the history of feminism and the history of Aboriginal women's struggles have every once in a while bumped into each other, there's been some difficulties in coexisting and in allyship. First, let me just say that for Aboriginal women, to us, feminism is being a traditional Aboriginal woman. So being the leaders of our communities, taking care of our families, making sure that, we are part of. And traditionally, we were the leaders of our community, and the men stood in front of us for protection purposes, not to lead us, but because we were the nurturers and the life givers and the leaders of the community, the men stood in front of us to capture any negativity that would be coming our way. And so those to us are our rightful ways, and Aboriginal women today who are going through their healing processes and working towards a better future for Aboriginal women and all women in the world are really not using the word feminism. And in some points, in case women who have been in this struggle for 30, 40 years have a real hard time identifying with feminism because of the beginning of feminist movement, white feminist women who had very good intentions of helping Aboriginal people, but instead instead of walking alongside, created a rift. So Aboriginal women didn't want other women, of course, doing the work for them. They wanted to have allies to stand beside them, and that wasn't always the case. So we're seeing that some Aboriginal women who are out there, who are still doing the work, have... My experience has been that I've seen and been witness to women who are Aboriginal and women who are of color and white women who are feminists that are doing the same work, have the same purpose, have the same frame of mind, but yet Aboriginal women and the feminist movement still are having a hard time to sort of solidify because of the historical things that have happened. It took me a long time to identify as a feminist because I am a traditional Aboriginal woman. And I have come to the understanding that I have that to say. I can say that who I am is a feminist. I am a feminist for just being what I am. And I've come to realize that other women in the world don't have that opportunity because of the loss of teachings. So feminism to me is our traditional ways of being. Being a leader of the community, fighting for children, fighting for equal rights, wanting to make sure that our voices are heard and that we have connectivity and that we are understood and that we are respected. And so to me, that's just being a traditional Aboriginal woman. But for other women around the world who are not Indigenous to Canada, they're feminists. And so I can relate to being a feminist. And I know that that's really difficult for a lot of people who are walking this path and going through this journey. And my goal and the work that I'm trying to do is to bring some understanding and awareness to Aboriginal women who are struggling so hard to do this work, and also to create allyship, but are afraid of the word feminist. And so I think that there is a real fear in Aboriginal people, and for very good reason, for white patriarchal society to be involved in any of the work that we do, right? So, and that includes white women, unfortunately. I mean, not all white women are feminists. And so being able to discern the difference for an Aboriginal woman is very, very difficult, because there's the fear, first, of even approaching that woman and having conversations and learning about her due to the legacy of colonization and residential school. So, yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Yes, it is a lot. So I'm interested particularly in some of the, in hearing you speak a bit more about how it is difficult to approach women with a lot of privilege as an Aboriginal woman to seek allies, and in turn, what the responsibility of someone who is aiming to be a feminist ally, mm-hmm. what it is that they can do.
I think, first and foremost, that Aboriginal people should not be approaching anybody for help. I think it's society's responsibility to learn about where they are, whose territory they're on, and also what they can do to help the movement of bringing Aboriginal people to the forefront in this country and finding out what the issues are, especially for Aboriginal women and their children. So if there are allies out there, the best advice that I can give is that approach in a way that is supportive and says that there's an understanding about what happened in this country and in this part of Turtle Island. Because for me, when I came to work in the feminist movement, I really was like, wow, I'm surrounded by white women. How am I going to do this? This is going to be really difficult. And it was women who were white, who had privilege, who came to me and said, I'm white, I have privilege, I know it, what can I do? I don't want to do the work for you. I want to be able to stand in allyship with you. And it was just really clear. And there was no hidden agenda. It was just really, I understand what you're trying to do for your people. I know that there's, you know, you're doing a ceremony, or you're doing this piece of work around youth, or you're doing this work with women. What can I do to help? And so volunteers would come forward, and they were really, really excellent, excellent help. And I was quite surprised to see how many allies there are in the community, and I had no idea. And if I hadn't, you know, pushed myself to go and work into a place where it wasn't going to be strictly Aboriginal people, I probably wouldn't have known that.
Sometimes I feel spoiled that I get to work with feminists. And, you know, and it's easy to forget that work environments aren't always like that. And
right.
So I prefer to think in terms of, like, feminisms, in the sense of plural, with a lot of diversity in the meaning there, and instead of a more sort of homogenous capital F feminism, like, this is the way it is, which I think seems to open the movement to maybe more inclusivity. Are there sort of versions or manifestations, I guess, of feminism that you found to open the most possibilities for collaborating across difference?
Oh, boy. I think feminism is different for every single woman, because we all bring ourselves in, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and I think it, depending on what sector you work in, and what part of your life you're passionate about. So if you're a feminist medical nurse, your passions are going to be much different than, let's say, a trauma counselor, right? Or someone who's working in the downtown east side, the passion is going to be totally and completely different. Or a feminist who happens to be working, hopefully there will be more, in the police department, right? Your passions are going to be very, very different, and all the struggles vary. So I think that within Aboriginal structure, there is sort of three main streams that I've noticed of feminism, Aboriginal feminism, if you want to call it that. I probably get in a lot of trouble from my elders for that, but there are those that are solely looking into police action and really want equal rights for Aboriginal women regarding murdered and missing women, and the way that that's all, and that is such a huge and important piece of work. And then there are those women who are there working for Aboriginal families who are saying, you know, we're the leaders of our communities. We need to be able to heal our men. We need to be able to heal children. And that's our job as Aboriginal women, which you won't hear in other forms of feminism. But because it's part of our culture, it's an important part of our feminism. To be Aboriginal women is to mean, if you are leading community, that means that you are also the leader of those men. And so the responsibility then is different, because we are wanting that responsibility. We are wanting to say, we need to heal our women, we need to heal our children, and then we need to heal our men. So that's very different. And very young Aboriginal women are really in touch and in tune with coming into ceremony and what that looks like from the academic realm. And keeping those two things separated is really, really difficult. And to hear our young women who are coming in saying that these are our traditional teachings and they're not supposed to be written down, but yet we need to be able to change laws and we have to be able to try and, you know, have some stewardship over what happens with the resources in this country. How do we do that as women and as leaders of our communities? And then also there's the chiefdom systems that are not set up to support women anymore. So, you know, even within our own culture, there's real economic and political and cultural components to it, and they're all different. So that's a difficult question to answer.
Yeah. I'm curious about with the chief system. Was there some, I can imagine with colonizers coming in and seeing men standing in front of women, that there was a horrible misunderstanding mm-hmm. of what that meant in terms of where the leadership was. And then it seems now that there's a lot of men in these chief positions. Well,
of course, because through the colonization process and the loss of teachings and various other miscommunications that have happened throughout history, what's happened is even our people a lot of the territories across Turtle Island, or Canada, if you want to call it that, but across Turtle Island, have picked up patriarchal ways of being, right? So we're not immune. There is Christianity and patriarchy riddled within our people. I recently heard of, this just drove me crazy, but a reserve in Winnipeg where the Christian Aboriginal people there and the male chiefs went and tore down a sweat lodge right on their own territory. So if that's not patriarchy and colonization at its finest, I don't know what is, right?
That's incredible.
Yeah.
The F Word, Vancouver's explicitly feminist radio show. Filling your head with naughty feminist ideas since 2007.
Today on the show, we're talking about Aboriginal women and feminisms and re-airing a conversation with Darla Goodwin, traditional Aboriginal woman, community leader, and advocate for the rights of women and children around sexual violence. Here is the second part of that interview.
So the work to heal men within the community. What do you think feminism could learn from that?
Well, the way that we look at it when we get together in our traditional circles and we talk about it, the way to heal men is first by ending violence towards women. So that's interesting. And in order to end violence against women, men need to receive their traditional teachings and they need to go through a traditional justice system, which is restorative. So learning about how to walk in a good way as Aboriginal men with women and children, and doing that in a way where the women are not doing that work, the men are doing it, but the women are saying this needs to be done through that leadership. And so I think that's happening out in the community. I know that we do that here with, like within the scope of our work, we do attitudinal change with men and we do, you know, with young boys, but, in this context, it's at ceremonies and at very large ceremonies, and when the women stand up and they say these are the issues that we're facing and it's up to you men now to change it, and we need to see it. We're seeing it in ceremony, but there's four seasons. Next year we come back and you tell us what you did, right? So that's a different point of view, because we hold each other accountable. So when we go in and they ask, is there anything to be said, and we offer a prinsen or tobacco or whatever it is from your territory that we offer, and we go in and we say, this is what's happening in the community, and we need help, and we need to be able to work with this, we need to work with youth, and, you know, those things are, the communities are really small, but they're growing. We are seeing more and more and more young women and men coming into ceremony, and it's just spreading like wildfire. It's not constantly available to those in the city, but there are sweats and there are longhouses and there are ceremonies that young people who have been urbanized are able to get to. So it's good news.
I'm really interested to hear that this ending violence against women is at the center of healing what's happening between cultures, between genders, or across cultures, across genders, and that focusing on that will allow us to heal, and will allow a lot of things to happen. I think that's really interesting because that is really at the heart of a lot of feminist activity, at the heart of a lot of Aboriginal social justice movements too, right?
Right. So in traditional Aboriginal culture, and I'll keep saying that, you can call it, you know, Aboriginal feminism or whatever. With women being the leaders of the community, it's most important that the women are healthy and strong. And there are even saying, I can't remember who said it now, but there is a saying that says, not until the heart of the women is on the ground has the community failed. So I'm getting emotional. if you think about the women as being the center and being responsible, as we are, for the nurturance of our children, for teaching, for guiding, for assisting men. In our way, we direct men as to what it is that they need to do in life. And so if there are things that need to be done around our home fire and we need to delegate those tasks, we delegate to men. And so being strong enough to delegate and to do all of the rest of the things, and also to work and to do the things that women need to do as women, we need to be healthy. And if people are violating us and they're hurting our young women and they're hurting our elder women and they're hurting our women, we're not going to be healthy. So in order for our communities to be able to stand up and be who we truly are, women have to be healthy first. So when you have healthy women, you have healthy children. When you have healthy women and children, you have healthy men. That is sort of our understanding. Also, our understanding is women, which is really today in feminist movement is really thought of as really backwards and bizarre. But to us, the gifts that we were given as women were to be able to care for our families. And I think this is another point in feminism that makes it difficult for Aboriginal women to think that it's not right, because our gifts of being a mother, of being able to take care of her home fire in her home, and to be able to cook and clean and do the things that women are really, really good at, to have your family come in and smell those smells and know that you're the one that put all that mothering and all of that nurturance and all of that really positive female energy into the food that they're going to eat, or into the beds that they're going to sleep in, or into the clothes that they're going to wear, that you were the one that took care of that and made sure that the energy was mothering, is to us sacred. And so when we hear women say, I'm not going to clean my house, and I think men should do the dishes, and, you know, that part of feminism, which is part of the fight for equality, scares off Aboriginal women for the reasons of teachings, of the fact that our energy is so strong that we should be the ones to put that energy into our families, and no one else can possibly do as good of a job as the mother could, is to us, it's a gift. It's not something that we wanted to share. So those are differences, right?
Yeah. That kind of family work that's happening in Aboriginal communities is so respected, right? Mm-hmm. And it's, I think, in white North American patriarchal culture, mm-hmm. those roles are so undervalued and underappreciated that it was something that feminists saw as something that needed to be rejected or shared, or something had to change because those roles were simply not respected at all. I think maybe things would be different if they were held in such high esteem, such high regard. What do you think?
I think so. I think that and I believe my teachings say that we all walk this way at one point in time. So women around the world at one point in time were gifted with the ability to share that kind of energy and that kind of nurturing. And, you know, you look, in my thought, I look at the Creator and I see somebody who is nurturing. They're a teacher, they're a life giver, they're strict, they're sharing, they're kind. When I look at the Mother Earth, she's a teacher, she's a life giver, she's nurturing, she's strict, she's kind, she's caring, she's sharing. When I look at my mother, my grandmother, she's a life giver, she's strict, she's nurturing, she's kind, she's caring, she's sharing. She was a teacher. So I don't see anything wrong with sharing in that kind of energy, right? So those were the belief systems that we had, that women came from the energy of the cosmos, and that we shared in the ability to nurture like the earth. So when you think about that, and you have a society who values that, it's very different. And that's where we're trying to go back to, right? And not only that, but I mean, if there was a society here that valued all of those characteristics of us being female, of being able to lead and being able to multitask and to really think about what is good for a community and not just me and mine, right? But what's good for everybody and what's good for the earth? We go back to a place where we're living in societies that are being, today they call it green, right? I just call it being traditional. So we would be going in a direction that would bring people into not only a healthier state of mind, a less violent society, but also renewable, right? So, you know, women are very resourceful. We don't rely on the almighty dollar and the almighty sword. So we rely on each other for a lot of things. And things could be done a lot differently, I think.
Are you kind of referring to community?
Like politics.
Politics. Yeah.
So I think that, you know, politically, for Aboriginal women to be able to be leaders of the community, things would definitely change.
When I've heard you speak about teachings before, I remember you also talking about women who do not or are not able to give birth, or men who maybe, I think the term is two-spirited, these kinds of things. These are also sacred positions.
Oh, absolutely.
So there isn't sort of like one essential role that a woman has to fill. There's some other roles that are possible?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So actually what I'm hearing from my spiritual teachers and from elders in the communities and in our traditional way, there was actually 8 genders. And so they all had teaching roles. We had gay people, we had gay men and women, and their role was actually to teach and create understanding between men and women. So our understanding was that they carried both female and male energy. And so that if there were discrepancies with the chiefs and the leaders of the community, the matriarchs, that they would call forward their sacred spirits. There is no such thing as a two-spirited person. That is a total and complete New Age word.
Uh-huh.
And so no one has two spirits, but they have the energy and the understanding of energy of both male and female. And so they were just called sacred, the sacred ones. So they would be called in and they would talk amongst themselves and they would try and gain some understanding from one of the sacred ones. So if the men and women could not understand each other, they would call one of the sacred ones in and they would be able to understand through that person because they would take the information in from the male or the female and send it out in the way that the other one could understand. So that was their role. And there were other roles as well. Women who were unable to give birth were thought to be knowledge keepers and leaders of the community and they were also thought to have been brought here and to be old grandmothers with knowledge and wisdom to share with the community. And they would stay with the elder women and they would be teachers. Well, there are so many roles. Yeah. So it's really interesting.
Seems to me that there is a huge lack of understanding of those traditions. And I think that kind of fluidity or more of a continuum across genders or just that there's a multiplicity. I think that today's feminism, a lot of the feminism that I'm exposed to anyways, could really get behind that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's mm-hmm. like a shame that there's such a lack of understanding, a lack of education about that.
Well, I think that it'll come. And that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to talk to you is because I think that the understanding needs to be heard, right? So that when allies are trying to get together, whether those allies are white feminists or Aboriginal traditional women, who are also feminists, I have to say it, when they get together, that there's an understanding of how we can work together and that the goal is the same. The goal is the same. It may be, deviated in a few slight ways, but ultimately, at the end of the day, it's about respecting and honoring women, about ending violence against women, and about creating safe places and equal rights. Women, we have a very difficult time getting our voices heard, but we as Aboriginal women have an even harder time.
Yes.
So having that allyship to walk with us, support us, and hold us up is so important.
The F-Word, Vancouver's explicitly feminist radio show. F'ing up the airwaves since 2007.
Feminist anti-violence communities.